Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams, stop dieting, so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is what it is all about. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. Not your diet. If you'd like to call in and talk with me, the number here is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It's not. Food is the solution to the problem, actually. The real problem is what is eating at you. And so I am here to help you talk through those root issues so that everything with food can then change. Again, the number 323-203-0815. Okay, I have some questions today. These are from members of my online group, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community. Actually, not my group, my community. If you'd like to join, go head over to Facebook and join my Food for Thought community. It is free and you can ask me questions and I will answer them. Okay, Nicole says, can you speak a little bit about how people use food as reward and how can you shift that mentality? What are some practical things you can do instead? So, no, this is not my personal number, by the way. I should mention that. Someone is asking on Instagram, is this my personal number? It is not. It is the number for the LA Talk radio station that is routed through the actual studio where I am not and into my home. So that if you call that number, you will talk to Ronan, my engineer, and then he will patch you through to me, as apparently he has just patched Carly Gash through. So I'm going to answer Nicole's question in a little bit. Hi, Carly Gash.
Good morning, Dr. Nina. How do you hear me?
You're a little muffled.
How about now?
That's a little better.
Okay. And how about now?
I feel like I'm in the eye doctor's office and they keep switching that thing. Like, what about now? What about now? And everything sounds and looks exactly the same as the last one. What about two? It's the same as one. Okay. So I can hear you. You start talking and I'll tell you if something goes wrong.
Okay. So my question is about emotions and feelings, right off the bat, not about food, although, I managed to stop binging yesterday and today. Thank God, with your help and others on a lot of changing as well in the life. So you know that I was diagnosed with Lyme disease, and I've been watching this past 2 weeks, how it manifests itself in life. So it turned out to be chronic. So most probably I have it since I was a kid. And yesterday I was doing this binge rebates, your program, where we on a Zoom meeting and all of us, so many people. And for the first time, I was thinking, hey, this is a safe place. Let me show up just the way I am. And somebody texted me, left a message, a chance to share. I was busy as well at work, but she said, I wish you could share because you felt, seemed to be so sad and down and all this. And I just, today texted her back you know what, I was not exceptionally sad. This is how I feel pretty much my whole life, except when I'm doing something interesting. I don't know, when my mind is busy with something new or something. But Lyme disease is I have always chronic pain inside my body, but I already learned to maybe not notice it so I could actually leave. live life and, you know, mask it all the time. Because when I come to society, anywhere, to work, on a date, to talk to friends, I need to cover the pain and I need to pull up emotion. So I noticed that, like, it's a coping mechanism. When people say, how do you feel? I never tell them, because if I just bring on my face whatever I'm feeling inside, pain, and consequently, when brain is exposed to pain all the time, like, sometimes it's very challenging to keep the mood up and the emotions up, but I even managed to do that. So when people ask you how I am, I had to, like, give them this version. But yesterday, I was thinking, hey, Binge Free Base is a safe space, so I'll just show up the way I am. I showed up, and I could see how, like, how down I was, my face. And I always feel ashamed of my real emotions, because I feel like when I show up like this, I feel like I make people uncomfortable, or it just...
Okay, stop. Okay,
bring the whole mood down.
Let me address that. That if someone discerns that you are sad or you are struggling, that you make them uncomfortable, then you are disguising your true feelings, your true expression that you're in pain, both physical and emotional, to protect somebody else, to protect the other, so you don't show up authentically. And then what happens with those feelings? They end up being unbearable, and there's binging to get away from them. Yeah. So my question would be, where did you learn that your feelings are somehow a burden to others or make others uncomfortable?
Thank you very much, Dr. Nina. I was also thinking about it because I know you're going to ask it. And this is how you taught me, and I'm very grateful. So first of all, I want to say for this person who texted me privately, I'm very happy she texted me. It's just so she doesn't think that, I mean, I feel uncomfortable. No, I'm very happy that she acknowledged it. It warmed my heart, hurt so much. So where I learned that my feelings are burden, well, it's not too far. You know, my mom was schizophrenic, and she is a person with special needs, and I was a parentified child. I pretty much was an adult, and I was parentifying her. So when there were, like, times, when there were times and I had to... be strong as a kid, I never had a chance to sit on her laps and, like, be capricious and say, oh, mommy, you want to know what? I want this toy. I have this problem. Never had that. I, as a kid, was thinking how to get money, how to get food, how to cook, how to manage two schools, like musical and like lyceum. How, and also, I was responsible for her emotional state. So I kind of learned to be, I learned to, like, you know, wake up the dead people. Like, you know, when a person is schizophrenic, it's pretty much mental disorder. They have something going on in their brain, so they cannot be happy by default or something. So I developed so many techniques.
You have to keep survive. Up. Okay, so Carly Gash, you learned how to survive with a schizophrenic mother and this family that you've spoke about often on the show, which, of course, did not display a lot of interest in what was going on with you. And the strategies that you learned were to take care of and entertain and compliment and relate to people in a certain way, but never... do anything in which you showed up too much because you were constantly being told you were too much. And so this is the strategy that you learn to survive early on. But then it's not like we get older and we suddenly change our strategies. We take the way that we survived in our families, in our childhood, we take that into the world.
And that's really uncomfortable.
And when you go into the world, you're not with people who are kind and interested and warm and considerate. You're with your original family, and that's why people will experience people not as they are, but as other people were. And so it's become just a habit, a habitual way of relating to others in the world. But then nobody is there for you and with you. Nobody is there to metaphorically have you on their lap and take care of you and hug you and listen to you. And no one is there for you. So food becomes the thing that takes care of you. Food, which represents
people,
becomes that which takes care of you. So part of the key is, and I'm so glad that you showed up at Binge Free Babes last night and were authentic and didn't try to hide it and didn't put on a performance of, hey, everybody, you were you. And that took a lot of courage. And look, this woman saw and reached out to you because she's concerned, not because you're too much, but because she cares. Mm-hmm. She cares about you. When you grow up with a schizophrenic mother, you don't grow up with a true parent. You don't grow up feeling parented. You have to contend with this person who is not able to be there for you and with you in a normal way. And then food becomes your parent. So learning to trust that other people can be there for you, that other people can care about you just as you care about others. Learning to receive, you take that in, and then when you take in the care of others, you don't need to only rely on food as the thing to take in.
So, thank you so much, Dr. Nina. As usual, it makes so much sense and just eye opening and. Also, I have a question. So I have this kind of fear because I never learned to show up the way I am regarding all my history. So right now I have kind of this modeled and learned behavior that I don't show up, that I don't burden people. I even have this when I show up at Binge Free Babes, I hide because I always think, oh, they just started the program. They need help. I've been already for a while with you. So I'm like stronger. See, I'm doing the same thing. The way I parentified my mother, this way I parentify Bench for Babes, which are many of them are women who are literally older than me. And it never comes to my mind that they can be even supportive or something. But thanks to this experience of yesterday, I got the support. I see that if I do things, new things, which are proper things to do, and I don't have to repeat this pattern, which I learned in my family, but I have this fear. Usually I was analyzing what doesn't let me perform new behavior, although like mentally I know because I've been learning about it. I figured out that it's fear, and it's coming from childhood, say, I never could show up the way I am with my emotions because, you know, of all those complications. But now when I'm adult and I understand that I'm in a new environment and maybe I can try a new behavior, but the fear is so subconscious. It's like, I don't even catch it. I don't even see it. Only if I sit down and analyze. So with this fear, is it if I do just new behavior, I will not die, right? So I just need to do stuff.
When we operate unconsciously, so much of what we do is unconscious. The motivations of why we do what we do are hidden from us in our unconscious minds. That's why I like the weed and root metaphor. You can see the weed, you cannot see the root, but the root is creating the weed, and the weed is the behavior you don't want, the behavior you want to get rid of, the attitudes you want to get rid of. So when you make the unconscious conscious, when you take what's hidden and bring it into the light, then you can see what you're dealing with it. So if you have this assumption that you have to give up yourself to take care of others so that they will merely tolerate you, that is an idea from childhood that we're digging out. That's a root thought, digging up and recognizing and challenging. So that you can say, wait a minute, I don't have to show up to take care of other people so that they merely tolerate me. I can actually take care of some people, and some people can take care of me. And that's mutuality. And that's reciprocity rather than this one way you give, they take mode that was very much a part of your childhood. All giving is not good and all risk-taking is not good. In the middle is when you give and receive, and you can trust that you don't have to just be the one who takes care of others to be liked, to be loved, to be known, to be accepted.
Yo, my thinking never goes to like to be accepted. I don't think about that at all. Like listening to you, I figured out that's true. To any room I come, to any whatever society, group of people, I always consider myself like the strongest or something. And I like automatically, subconsciously take care of all people except myself. So I think that I'm more knowledgeable. And it's ridiculous. I can talk to people who own millions, I don't know, corporations, you know, and I will still be younger and taking care of them. But then actually you helped me so much. And now,
if I may interject,
I see it very
because
I see it very clearly now. I don't have to do it anymore.
And you do old people older. Your aunts that you've talked about on the show are older.
Oh, that's
so
true.
When someone is an older person, it resonates in your psyche as an authority, as a parent, and that's how you relate to that person.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Because like, when I deal with kids, that's opposite. I never consider them weak. I consider them strong. See how interesting? Because when I played with kids, I saw them strong. I never can. But even with kids, sometimes I do this. It's like psychoanalysis, like the dopest thing ever. It's just so cool. Now I see the thing. I will think about it till the next week. I will not do this anymore because I already know. And maybe I'll do it a couple of times when it's coming, but I will recognize and learn from it. It's just, oh my God, psychoanalysis is like really my new entertainment. It's so cool. Oh, and Lyme disease now.
Well, I'm glad that you are challenging some of these thoughts and ideas that you have taken as truths so that you can move from a place of being selfless to self-care. Mm-hmm. And see, it's like to self-care, which is, you take care of others and yourself. They take care of themselves and you. This is balance, and this is ideal, and this is a recipe for a great society.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's cool.
Yes, let please, when you respond to whoever it was from Binge Free Babes who checked in with you, remember they're doing so because they care. You're not the only one who cares about others. Other people care about you, and receive that.
Honestly, it felt so good, Dr. Nina, because she was coming from such a strong, loving place, and I could feel that she is really strong herself, like, and she doesn't need help like I did to my mom. And it just felt so good. I cannot even explain, like, the way she texts, and she, it's not her first time she texts me, but I was freaking out when she was texting. I was like, because I didn't get used to receive like support like this, healthy support, and I was like trembling. But now I understand and I see. But honestly, it feels so good. It's just amazing.
Let that in. And let that be a new template for how to be in the world.
I'll make it a new template.
You don't have to earn people's love. You don't have to earn people's liking you. That you can just show up, and who you are is likable, and who you are is lovable. You don't have to earn
taking care
of others. Okay.
Sorry for cutting you. Just a second. I got it. So what we do here every time when I call, we make a new like cookie template with you. So I can take a new template, say a Christmas tree template, and make cookies for myself. So we're molding them.
Whatever symbolism works for you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. A new template, a new way of being in the world that soon will become the natural way.
Natural.
So
Got it. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Thank you for always calling in and being so vulnerable and open and reflective. That is a beautiful thing indeed.
Thank you so much. I love you, Pisces, and you're so amazing. Oh, my God.
Thank you, Carly Gash. I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Have a wonderful day, Dr. Nina. Thank you.
You too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
By the way, if you guys are interested in the Binge Free Babes program, which Carly Gash was just talking about, just go to bingefreebabes.com and learn all about it. Okay, Nicole's question. Questions, actually. Can you speak about how people use food as reward? How can you shift that mentality? And what are practical things you can do instead? Well, we often learn to use, we're taught to use food as a reward, actually. Because early on, parents say, hey, no dessert unless you eat all your chicken. Or, hey, if you do this, we'll go out to this special dinner. I mean, we in our culture, we actually do use food as reward. Birthday cake, celebration, reward, celebration. It's all part of the same kind of constellation. How do you stop? Oh, and by the way, sometimes parents do it because they are absolutely not thinking about it, as in the no dessert for you if you don't eat this. That's just setting up, you know, dessert as something special and coveted, and then you reward yourself later. But also sometimes just out of desperation. One of my friends was on a couple of years ago on a 5-hour trip to Yosemite with her two kids who were then, like 7 and 10, something like that. And those kids would not stop bickering. And if you've ever been in a car with bickering kids, 5 hours is a long time. So out of desperation, she went to a gas station. She bought a whole bag of candy and she bribed them to be quiet for 5 hours with candy. She said, I know it's not the right thing to do. I just couldn't think of anything else. So this becomes, you know, when these things happen, it's not nobody's fault. We just want to explain it. It's used as a reward. So the answer is to reward yourself differently. And think about how you might acknowledge or reward a friend. If a friend said, hey, I got a raise. Now you might say, hey, let's go out to dinner to celebrate. Maybe not these days when no one's going out to dinner, at least not in the LA area. But you wouldn't say, oh, you know, have some cookies. You'd say, that's great. I'm so proud of you. That's wonderful. You really earned it. This is fantastic, right? You would use words. And so rewarding yourself with words, being acknowledging yourself rather than rewarding yourself with food is important. The other thing about this is if food is a reward, that means food is a good thing to you. Now, food should be a good thing. It should be enjoyed. It's made to be delectable and delicious, and it ought to be enjoyed. In a perfect world, we enjoy what we eat. We don't have this battle with it and thinking, I should eat that, I shouldn't eat that, and the whole deal. But if you don't have enough fun in your life, you're going to use food for fun, food as a reward, food for fun. So one thing, Nicole, that I would suggest is develop other rewards in your life. What is fun to you? What can you do that is fun? What could you get to yourself that is that for yourself that is fun? The more fun that you have in your life, the less likely you will be to use food as a reward and food for fun. I'm getting nice messages. Thank you so much for the nice messages on Instagram. You guys are awesome. Appreciate the compliment. If you would like to join me The number is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I saw that Jenny had posted a comment on Instagram saying that she could really relate to what Carly Gash was saying. Jenny, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Let me know what's going on with you. From Robin. She says, I want your thoughts on journaling my meals. I feel like when I write down what I'm eating, I'm focusing on food all day. But it does help at times because I know when I'm overdoing it and making bad choices. Well, Robin, I agree with you. Writing down what you're eating all day does put the emphasis on what you're eating on food instead of what is eating at you. And also, if you are relying on writing down and journaling everything that you eat, then you are relying on a piece of paper or a note in your phone or something external telling you if you're overdoing it, rather than relying on within. How full am I? How hungry am I? What, on a scale of 1 to 5, where's my hunger? 1 to 10, where's my hunger? What sounds good, not from a emotional standpoint, but do I need protein? Am I in sort of a carb mode or whatever it is? When you are constantly journaling what you are eating, you are putting the focus on what you are eating instead of why. So, Josh, you're at Cedars. Well, thank you. I will continue to thrive, and I hope everything is okay at Cedars. You're in a great place, though. Doesn't get any better than Cedars-Sinai here in LA. So know when you're full by what your body tells you, not by what a note tells you. It's kind of what I eat. Oh, other than getting in touch with and being more attuned to your internal cues, which is, how hungry am I? And by the way, Jenny is on. Boy, ask and you shall receive. Here she is. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Dr. Nina. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's going on?
I was just, I was listening to your show as usual, and Carly Gash always, there's always something very related, even though we grew up in completely different countries, in completely different parts of the world, in completely different, cultures. I can always relate to something that she says. It's very interesting. Like, we're all connected in many ways, just as human beings and as women. So I really, like, when she was talking about how, when she feels, she always feels like she's the strong one, and she should take care of everybody, and, how her dynamic with her mother, I really can relate to it. It's very interesting. Even though the circumstances were completely different, I'm always the one too. Like, in my group of friends, someone has an issue, and I'm like, "Oh, okay, I'll fix it." And then I'm like, "How am I qualified to do any of this fixing?" I'm just so used to fixing because my mother relied heavily on me to be like her, her partner, because my father was an alcoholic and couldn't help her. And now that she's older, I had an issue with her yesterday, which is interesting that Carly Gash mentioned this, because I had a very long phone conversation with my mother yesterday, trying to explain to her how, she's not the only one. She wants me to help her do everything, during the pandemic. She thinks she's the only one going through it, not being able to leave the house and not being able to go to the store, not being in. She's just like, she thinks that I'm here to be her therapist and her delivery person and her, I'm like, lady, you're a grown woman.
Jenny, Jenny, say that again without laughing.
Lady, you're a grown woman? That part?
She wants me to be her delivery person and her. She wants you to be her mother.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And I think she had children, honestly. Like now, because I don't even get upset about it anymore. I see as I get older my mother's mental illnesses, you know, and I just think she had children. So not that she doesn't love me. It's not that I'm saying she doesn't love me. I just don't think she really understands that type of love between a mother and a child. I think she had children because she needed something. She needed children to like be her friend and be her, I hate to say it, servant. And I think that's the way she grew up in her culture. Like my grandparents are from Italy, straight off the boat. That culture is very family oriented. The women take care of the men, the young people take care of the older people. And, you know, she had a daughter thinking I would never leave her. You know, and I would take care of her for the rest of her life. And of course, what did I do? I left her and came to California. I abandoned her. And so she feels very alone. And that has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with her and nothing to do with me. But I do feel like I have to be strong all the time. Just all the time be strong. And I don't really have, you know, family to lean on when I need to be vulnerable or need help. So that's hard. That really takes a toll on me.
And then if you have put yourself in the position of being the carer of all your friends as well, then nobody is taking care of you.
Yes. And it's interesting because I even went into a job where at first I do makeup for the entertainment industry. And at first it was, you know, it was creative and it was fun and it was like drawing on faces and making people beautiful. But really that job, I work in the service industry. And so, you know, I'm taking care of my clients when I'm on set. And it's interesting that I went into a job that I'm also kind of like a caretaker, you know, and I'm like a built-in best friend on set. And I find all these really interesting, you know, I'm piecing it all together, how my childhood has led to my choices or, you know, even subconscious choices. Till now, and how I'm now pulling away from all of it because I'm so sick of taking care of other people.
Yes,
it's not to be mean. Oh, I don't want to be mean about it, but
it's not mean. It's balance.
Yeah,
it's balance. Yeah. That and sometimes when you're the kind of person who takes care of other people, and Jenny, I want to share with you that Carly Gash just posted about. Just said how amazing that people are so similar even in different parts of the world with a bunch of hearts for you. When you are raised with this implicitly stated, this is your role, then that's the role that is familiar to you. And then you can find people who are good with that role. Then you can find, unbeknownst to yourself, you know, make friends who are really good at receiving, which fits well with your giving. That dynamic then just gets, you know, perpetuated. But so it's really good that you're able to see how automatic this has been. And now you can start looking for how can you have reciprocity with other people? Who in your life is there to listen to you and be there for you and with you? How can you set limits with some of these people in your life who, you know, might have gotten very used to giving, and that's just how it is, and they don't even think about that it could be more reciprocal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm working on now, even with my mother, little by little, because she just can't think that way. You know, she just doesn't understand when I talk to her about, I give her metaphors. She doesn't understand it because of her anxiety. I don't even think she can focus on the words that come out of my mouth, actually. I think she just is in her own like world ball of anxiety. So even with her, I'm like, Mom, her phone breaks and she calls me and she's like, she like flips out and you need to fix this. And I'm like, Mom, okay. You know, you teach a man to fish and he will eat for a lifetime. Let me teach you how to fix your own phone. You know, and she just doesn't have the patience for it. So little by little, I'm trying to get her into like doing things for herself. And, you know, and it's been a hard pandemic. With her
setting limits and saying, you know what, Mom, I trust you have the capacity to figure it out yourself. I've got to go, but I know I have confidence in your ability to get this figured out, and they will figure it out because
she'll figure it out. And if she doesn't, who cares? It's just it's a game on your cell phone that you're freaking out about, you know, like, or it's a Netflix show that she can't play. I mean, these are the things she's freaking out about, you know. She's freaking out about these things that, you know, because she has nothing to do during the pandemic. She can't leave the house. She can't go to, you know, walk around the mall like she normally does, you know. So she hasn't taken to this whole stay at home situation very well. And sometimes I can understand. And then other times I think she just doesn't get it. Like the whole world is going through the same thing she is. She's so self-involved sometimes that she doesn't see that it's not just her, you know? And she thinks she gets in this like pity party, like, I can't even go to Walmart and walk around. Okay, lady, no one can go, you know, none of us can do that. Like, calm down, it's Walmart. But to her, that's, you know, it's like, you know, it's really a catastrophe.
And allowing yourself to respond in a different way, to set boundaries, to just in a measured way say, yeah, you and everybody else on the planet going through the same thing. Hey, I gotta go. You know, that setting limits and deflecting and changing this subject and not tolerating and not getting sucked into that. Eventually, she's going to stop.
Yeah, I'm hoping so.
And you have an opportunity to then figure out, well, how do you relate with other people if you're out of your comfort zone and you're not taking care of them, which could bring up its own challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I've been trying to, you know, ask some close friends, you know, when I need a favor or whatever. Normally I try not to ask anybody for anything because I feel horrible guilt, like I'm putting them out. But lately I've been trying to implement like asking for help and, you know, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting, to start getting taken care of a little bit. And I quite enjoy it actually.
Yes. You have a deficit of that. You have some time to make up.
Like, oh, you know, we're going to the store. Can we pick up anything for you? And I'm like, normally I'd be like, no, I feel horrible giving them a list of things. And lately I'm like, yeah, you know what? I need some stuff. Can you pick up some stuff for me?
Good. That's good.
And my door. Thank you.
and it's fine, right? You're not asking for too much. You're not your mother. Like,
no,
asking for help is not the same as being kind of a dependent, needy person like your mom. There's healthy needs and then there's neediness. And often we can get the two confused, especially when we have a very needy parent.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. And, you know, I used to think her neediness was weakest, and I think she just, you know, I think she's actually very strong and capable. And so I do have confidence that she'll figure out, you know, all of these issues that she calls me. She just says she just lacks patience. And because of her anxiety issues, focus, and she flips her lid. So I think that, you know, when I'm not there to help her or I can't help her, she'll figure it out herself. So I'm trying that. You know.
Yes, your job is not to help your mother figure things out from across the country. Your job is what every mother's job actually is, which is to empower their children, figure it out themselves. The relationship is flip-flopped. You are having to do that for her. But the more when you do that for her, you're also doing that for yourself. And that's good.
Well, thank you. And I hope Carly Gash got some good insight from my phone call too, because I think she could learn from, you know, from your words of wisdom as well from this.
Well, thank you. I think everyone who's been in a position of sort of sacrificing or ignoring their own needs and wants so that they can take care of the needs and wants of others, which then leads you empty, and that emptiness can be filled symbolically by food. It could be resolved through rosé. It can, in your case, it takes the form of, it takes many forms, but ultimately when you resolve the main issue, which is that things, you know, things are reversed and you don't, and too one-sided, and you start to have more reciprocity in your life, you need less rosé. You don't need to binge for fulfillment or whatever is going on with food.
Thank you. I appreciate you always taking my phone call.
Of course, Jenny, I appreciate your calls. And sounds like you're doing a lot of reflecting, and that is a very good thing indeed.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. I'll talk to you next week, hopefully.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
So Waleed has a question. He's on Instagram. He said, is a female necessary for a male to relieve stress, or can a man live without a woman? Well, we all need each other. We need to be interdependent. Some of us need people more than other people do. Some people need people less, but most people cannot only live with themselves. And the idea is to create interdependency so that you, whether it's a man with a man or a man with a woman or a woman with a woman or whatever incarnation it may take, we need to be able to take care of ourselves and be taken care of by others and take care of others. Interdependency means you have your own life. You don't wait to be completed by another person. Wait, what was that Tom Cruise movie with Renee Zellweger? I'm totally blanking out. Someone tell me. It's like on the tip of my tongue. With the whole "you complete me." Jerry Maguire, thank you, Ronan. Jerry Maguire, you complete me. No, nobody completes another person. You're a complete you. Thank you, Ronan. You're a complete you, and you also have a relationship with other people in which it should not be one-sided. You complete yourself. You are a complete person. You can take care of yourself, and you can take care of other people and that those people can take care of you. That is ideal. That's interdependency. So Waleed, I hope that that answers your question. Just in the couple minutes that we have left, I just want to say something to Robin regarding journaling. If you, Robin, or anyone who can relate to Robin, does not feel ready to stop journaling and stop journaling meals, I would change it up a little bit. Rather than I'm going to write everything that I eat down, I would, yeah, write it down, but don't make that the focus. Write down, you know, how hungry was I? What was going on? Is it physical hunger or emotional hunger? What was my purpose in eating this? Was it lunch? And that was that? Or was it, oh, I'm anxious and I'm going to eat this or that to deal with my anxiety or to calm my body down? Or did I eat a bunch of chips because I'm upset? Food mood formula, chips equate to anger, frustration, any form of anger. So write down what you're eating if you must, but write down what is eating at you as well. Write down what you ate or what you are going to eat. What are you thinking about? What's on your mind? If you weren't eating, what would be on your mind if it's emotional hunger? That shifts it to less about food and more about what is going on within you. I have one more quick question. This is from Sharon. She says, how can I apply your principles when I have an eating plan after weight loss surgery that includes counting calories, fat grams, carbs, and protein? You know, this is a tough one, Sharon, but it's very similar to questions people ask me about doing the AIP protocol that I've had to do because of my autoimmune disease, which is all about restriction. And what I had to do was change my mindset instead of, oh, I can't have that. Oh, I can't have that. I can't have that. Binging or overeating, you want what you can't have. In my case, yeah, I want what I can't have, but I also know that if I have it, it's going to be bad for my health. And so, Sharon, I would apply that a similar principle that you're counting these calories, fat grams, carbs, and protein because you are attending to your health rather than make it about I can only have this much, or rather than make it about, you know, deprivation or dieting or it's that kind of diet mentality. Say, okay, I know what's good for my body. I know what's good for my health, and I'm going to stay within my range because of that. I really want to be the healthiest that I can be. And that would be my recommendation. It's hard knowing that deprivation leads to binging or overeating. It's hard when focusing on what you're eating distracts you from what's eating at you, puts the focus on the wrong thing. But if you have to do it, just tweak the mindset a little bit and focus on, I'm doing this for health and not as a diet kind of mentality. I hope that helps. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much to Carly Gash and Jenny and Waleed and Josh and everyone who joined me both calling and on Instagram. I really appreciate you. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to answer your calls, to help you deep dive into what is eating at you and weighing on you. Because when you deal with that, all of those food issues go away and you get true liberation. If you check out bingefreebabes.com, that's bingefreebabes.com, and you can join us. We meet every Monday night. The Facebook community is, you know, pretty much people are all over the world, so it's sort of 24/7 kind of community. It's just a beautiful thing to see and to be part of, and I'm really so honored to be a part of it with Kelly Gunter, my co-host. So, everyone, stay healthy, stay safe, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.